Hello, I'm your host, Avery. I'm the founder and CEO of Bloom, an HR and DEI consulting firm, and a big believer that work should work for all of us. As always, I'm joined with Liz, GirlBoss's general manager, and Victoria, GirlBoss's senior writer, who both co-produce this podcast. Today's guest is Tori Dunlap, founder of Her First 100K, a money and career platform for Gen Z and millennial women. She's a Seattle-based money expert, self-made millionaire, New York Times bestselling author of Financial Feminist, and host of the number one money podcast for women in the world. Now, that's a jam-packed CV, and I'm very excited for this conversation today.
Seriously, I was blown away when I read this. So she started a gumball vending machine business at the age of 9. By the time she was in high school, she had 15 machines, and all of the proceeds went to her college fund. That's pretty iconic. She also became the youngest manager running marketing for a major company and saved her first 100K by the time she was 25. Then in 2022, she quit her job and became an entrepreneur full-time. Now, Liz and Avery, I wanted to get your thoughts. So Fortune recently came out with an article saying that millennial women are the economy's power players. Do either of you feel like an economic power player?
I saved 100K before I hit the age of 30 and bought my first home, and I've been an entrepreneur since I was 28. I think that I'm an economic power player, but for different reasons. It has nothing to do with how much money I've saved or what I've bought, but it more so comes from the fact that I've employed women via my company, Bloom, for the last 6 years. I've really focused on cultivating a workplace that can work for a lot of people, where they don't experience burnout or stress or have really horrible work experiences like I have. And I think that in itself is a pretty powerful thing to do because I'm empowering women by way of work. I think that a lot of women are economic power players. Like, I think we're collectively as millennials totally contributing to it, regardless of how much money you earn or have saved or what you bought in the past. And when we think that women didn't have the opportunity to have access to their own credit card until 1974, we've made a lot of progress in what, like 50-ish years?
I will say that ever since I was very young, school age, it was always drilled into me by my mother to have your own money, make your own money, don't rely on a man for money. This is a very interesting conversation to be having on the backs of both of our divorce episode and our tradwife episode. And Tori touches on this thread that when you have money, you have options. When you have money, you can make decisions that otherwise you would not be able to make, to leave a relationship, to start something new, to wipe the slate clean. And when I was younger, and you know, I was like 12 or something, and my mom would tell me this, like, never rely on a man, make your own money. It went over my head because I didn't have a real context to it. But then recently in my early 30s, I did choose to leave a relationship. I mean, is it a correlation or a causation that I only felt empowered to do that when I was at a point where I was making enough money to stand on my own, maintain my lifestyle on my own? And I didn't need the double income, no kids lifestyle in order to live the way I wanted to live. So maybe it's a coincidence, but maybe it's just very obvious that as soon as I reached a certain level of financial independence, I was like, I'm going to try being single now and really go at this on my own. And going back to women not being able to have credit cards or open bank accounts without their husband's signature in the 70s, I am the first woman in the entire lineage of women in my family, my grandma, my mother, to make more money than my partner. And I'm the first person to be able to independently make decisions because I'm financially able to do so. My mother has worked every day since she was 16, my grandmother as well, but never did they earn nearly the same amount as their husbands. And I saw generationally how that impacted their decision-making power, where they lived, what they did, how they spent their retirement money. It all plays a role. And I saw the resentment that that can cause in otherwise nice marriages. It's still a thorn in my mother's side that she is still so shortchanged and not able to vocalize the things that she wants because she feels like she's not an equal player in the marriage because she's not contributing as much or more than her husband.
Wow, that's a vulnerable share. Thank you so much, Liz, for sharing all that. And I mean, I've had the opposite experience with my mom, as she was the primary breadwinner for the majority of our lives and growing up as children, until she essentially funded my dad starting his own business. And then things shifted about 15 to 20 years into entrepreneurship, where he became the breadwinner. What was interesting is I grew up with a mother that was very much in charge of a lot of the decisions that we made. So it's a really powerful thing when women have choices. And when we think about the system of patriarchy, it also disenfranchises men. This is not an affirming system for anyone that's underneath it. So yeah, I really love this conversation.
I also loved with Tori that she gave really practical tips for people dealing with financial stress, anxiety. Like me, I don't really know where to start. And she was really open and transparent about which types of accounts to put your money in and how you shouldn't wait to pay off your student debt before starting to save for retirement. So it's not just, oh, stop eating out, or like avocado toast is the reason why you're like not saving, which is such bullshit. I feel like Tori is really closing that information gap for women when it comes to financial empowerment.
Tori, welcome to Girl Boss Radio. I am very excited to have this conversation with you today and kind of anxious. Money makes me feel a little bit anxious.
Well, I am excited to be here and I'm hoping to put all those fears for you and listeners to rest. So,
for folks that decided to listen to this conversation and you may be navigating your own money challenges right now, maybe you're in debt, maybe you're worried about how much you make, maybe you want to make more money, I want to frame this conversation so it's super helpful and tip focused so you can leave this conversation with lots of things that you can actually implement that will help to make some changes for you. So, Tori, how ready are you to share like all the tips?
I'm queen of actionable advice. I don't like inspiration porn. I don't feel like it does anything. I'm here to hype you up as well as give you a plan forward. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So speaking of hyping people up, I know that you have been super, super active around organizing, supporting women towards financial liberation and freedom, which is fantastic. What inspired you to embark on this mission?
Honestly, Donald Trump getting elected. I graduated college in May of 2016, and I was 21, 22, trying to figure out what kind of person I wanted to be and what did it mean for me to show up in the world. And then about 5 months after that, Donald Trump gets elected. And I'm coming into adulthood, but really into womanhood in a very different country than I think a lot of us expected. First female president? Nah, Donald Trump. So I was realizing in my own life that when I had money, I had options. When I had money, and we're not talking Jeff Bezos money, we're just talking an emergency fund and enough money to get by, I could donate to causes I believed in. I could support candidates and legislation that I believed in. I could start a business. I could leave a toxic situation I didn't want to be in anymore or that didn't feel safe to me anymore. I could take a vacation. All of your options open up to you. And so I was the friend all of my friends were coming to for advice and guidance around money. And I started realizing that maybe this was it. Maybe this was the way that we could, and me specifically, and my impact, I could help women figure out how to gain financial independence and that financial foundation so they never had to be in a situation that they didn't want to be in anymore because they couldn't afford to leave. I don't think anything bad happens when women have more money. And I think a financial education is our best form of protest in this system that constantly disenfranchises marginalized groups. So I was working 9 to 5 in marketing and growing her first 100K on the side. And 2019 took it full time. I literally hit my own 100K goal of saving $100,000 at 25 and went to Europe to celebrate, got the call to be on Good Morning America in a pub in London, came home, did the interview, and then quit my job 3 weeks later. And the rest has been kind of crazy since then. A New York Times bestselling book, our podcast, which is the number one money podcast for women. And this is what I believe I was put on this earth to do, is fight for women's financial rights.
And one thing I wanted to mention is we actually had a guest on a previous episode named Soraya, and she wrote a whole book centered around women's rage and has dedicated her life's work to studying, researching, and understanding the power of women's rage. And it's so funny, what inspired her to go on that journey was also Donald Trump. So talking a little bit more about financial liberation and financial freedom, I love how you frame it as more money, more options. What does it mean to have more options when it comes to money? You talked about being able to leave and exit toxic situations. How do we actually get there?
The biggest barrier to women having their own decisions is just a lack of money, is a lack of their own financial foundation. We unfortunately get emails literally every single day from women all over the world at this point now who say, I'm in an abusive relationship and I can't leave because he controls our finances, or I don't have my own money, or he's taken out a credit card in my own name and tanked my credit score so I can't get my own apartment. That in and of itself is reason why women need financial liberation. And then you want anything else in this world, right? You want to start that business. You want to have children. You want to not have children. You want to get married. You want to not get married. You want to buy a house or you want to keep renting. Like, you need money to do that. And so when it comes to our work at Her First 100K, what I'm really focused on is, of course, how do we get more money into more women's hands? But also, how do we start changing the system that exists? I think the conversation in personal finance for many, many years, and a lot of the traditional personal finance experts would tell you, oh, well, if you're not rich, you're not working hard enough. Or, oh, the reason you can't buy a house, and we've all heard this one, is the latte or the avocado toast, or now it's the fucking Stanley Cup out of nowhere. That's the new one. What that tells me is that there has been a lack of conversation about
systemic oppression and all of the systemic issues at play when it comes to money. So the thing we're really focused on is, yes, these actionable resources, which I know we'll talk about today, but also this reminder to people that this is not your fault. Your personal finance equation is about 20% your personal choices. How do you get out of debt? How do you learn how to invest? How well do you budget? And then it's about 80% everything else, including but not limited to racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, $1 trillion student debt crisis, stagnating minimum wages, lack of paid family leave in this country, right? There's so many other things. So if I can get more money into more women's hands, not only does the world start changing at the individual level for these women, but their communities start changing, their families start changing because we show up as the fullest version of ourselves because we're safe, stable, content, and joyful.
What are your thoughts on the growing trend to be a stay-at-home girlfriend or a trad wife as it relates to like financial liberation and income?
Avery, you literally must have been in our company Slack because not 5 minutes before you and I hopped on, we were discussing it as a team of like, we need to do an episode about this. I thought this would be going away by now and it's clearly not. So let's talk about it. And literally we were talking right before we started recording about all of these articles that have come out recently. And I was just reading a Cosmopolitan article about what happens to stay-at-home girlfriends when you break up. And one of the quotes in the article that I found so impactful was something like, well, if he feeds you, he can also starve you. And that's what we're talking about when we are dependent, stereotypically, on men. If you crave that lifestyle, my mom was a non-compensated working mom. That is such an important role in society, but we need to talk about it differently. And we also need to understand that if that is something you're choosing to do, I can have you under no circumstances fully financially dependent on somebody, and especially not your partner. So when it comes to trad wife, stay-at-home girlfriend, I'm usually like, personal finance is personal. Things depend on your situation. But one of my hard and fast rules is you always need some of your own money because of what I said before, where you can't escape situations that you don't want to be in anymore. And the most dramatic version of that is straight up abuse. But a more quiet version of that is maybe you just don't want to be in that relationship anymore. Maybe you love this person, but maybe it's not working anymore. And if you are financially dependent on somebody else, you're not leaving. I have a lot of theories about it. I think women are just exhausted. I think we're just exhausted and we crave somebody coming in and just being like, nah, I'm handling it. I got you. Everything's going to be fine. And I understand that as somebody who's busy and does so much emotional labor and just like every single woman out there, I understand why that is appealing. But at the same time, you are forgoing your own independence, your own freedom, and your escape hatch for potentially temporary comfort.
Absolutely. And we don't know necessarily how temporary that will be. And I went on a rant about this because I am obsessed about systems of oppression. And when we think about the role that capitalism plays and how it influences our lives, specifically women, it's important to acknowledge that having agency over money is very different from having access to it. I'm looking forward to when you and your team come out with that episode. We'll definitely share it with folks. We've been having conversations about trad wives and stay-at-home girlfriends as well here at Girl Boss too. It's more of the cautionary tales that are coming out on social media from women that are exiting 20-year-long partnerships and relationships where they were reliant on their partner's finances, and now it's gone. Just swooped out from underneath their feet.
Yeah, and literally, I'm not kidding. You could open up any one of our general inboxes here at Her First 100K, and the amount of messages we're getting from women in their 50s and 60s who have, again, maybe a more mild version of this, but are just like, my loving husband who I adore just passed away, and I have no idea what I'm doing. There's no trace of where the money is. I don't know how to log in. I don't know what I'm doing. Then there's the, yeah, we just got divorced and they handled all of the money. And so I don't have anything left for me and I have to start over. And then what we're talking about, especially on TikTok, it tends to be younger women, the situation of abuse or the situation of I can't get out of because I don't have the money. So we all think it's not going to happen to us or like, I'm not going to be that version. But this happens so frequently because of this system that has told women that the pursuit of wealth is wrong, that men know more about money and are better with money than you are, so you should just let them handle it. I see this also with women trusting financial advisors. A multi-billion dollar industry has been built on the backs of making women feel like they're too stupid to understand. This massive industry is run by straight white men named Chad who wear Patagonia vests.
Yeah, Tori, I think you're so right. Today, I was on Instagram, as we all are, and I saw a Vox article that showed up and it said, "Want financial security in America? Better get married." And the way that they kind of underscored this was, "Couples get hundreds of legal and economic privileges. Single people don't. If that feels unfair, it's because it is." I'd love to get your thoughts on the whole concept of how coupled people, specifically in heterosexual relationships, get more benefits by being married.
Yeah, I mean, there's both legal and financial benefits, right? There's certain tax breaks that you get. There's certain privileges for, home ownership. I think one of the big ones that is even more topical now, just things cost less when there's two incomes. Just day-to-day expenses, right? Like rent in a big city, a one-bedroom apartment split in half is a lot easier to afford. And this is back to my original point where a lot of people stay in relationships that they don't want to be in anymore because, wow, I can't afford $2,000 a month in rent, but I can afford $1,000 in rent. Mm-hmm. Same thing with groceries, right? And inflation and everything and getting more expensive. It's a lot easier to split things. That dual income life is just a lot easier to live than a single income life. And that's both math and that's also emotions. In theory, if you are in a equitable partnership, you have somebody who's also contributing to the load of doing tasks around the house, of running errands, of life administration tasks. So yeah, there's a lot of financial benefit to getting married. But there's also, of course, just like anything else, there's certain things you are taking on too by being in a partnership.
Yeah. For single people, building wealth and saving for the future can feel really daunting. What practical steps can they take to overcome these challenges and start investing wisely?
I think the first one is you need to know where your money's going. And I know that sounds simple, but the average person cannot tell me where their money is and what it's doing. Every dollar you make needs to have a job. It should be assigned a job, whether that is to go towards your expenses, whether that's to be saved or invested for retirement or to pay off debt, or that's for a fun vacation or going out on the weekends. Every single dollar needs to have a job, and you need to know your cash flow. What's going in, what's going out. A lot of people, we call it in the book, the ostrich effect. People bury their head in the sand. They act like their problems don't exist. We see this in sitcoms all the time, right? People like put their bills in the freezer on Parks and Recreation or in the closet on New Girl. And it's just like, people just are so scared to look at their money. So the first task is to get comfortable being uncomfortable and to look at what money's coming in, what money's coming out, because you can't make a plan until you understand what's going on. And speaking of where the money's going, like what kind of accounts is it in? Something like a bank account. We're really good stereotypically at saving for women. Women are really good at putting away money every month. If your money is going to an everyday savings account, you are earning literally like 0.3%. That is the national average versus something like a high yield savings account. If you follow me, you know that basically at this point, I have high yield savings account tattooed on my forehead because I talk about them so much. But we're seeing like 4-5% interest as opposed to, again, less than 0.5%. And this is for your short-term goals. So your emergency fund, which is the first step for anybody on their financial journey. You need that savings should something go awry. If you're trying to go on a vacation, you're trying to get married in a couple of years, you're trying to buy that house, a high yield savings account is a really important tool. And again, literally takes 10 minutes to open. It's just like a normal savings account. So that's an easy thing you can do. And then finally, you were mentioning like investing. This is the most common thing I see for women is, again, we're good at saving, but we've been told that investing is not for us, that it's complicated, that you need a bunch of money to start, and none of that's true. And we know that, of course, with the wage gap, we're making less than men, but women are waiting longer to invest compared to men or not investing at all, which means they're taking less money because of the wage gap. It's growing at a slower rate, and then we're expected to live longer on that money. And that equation makes no fucking sense to me. So what we need to start doing is think bigger about how we build our wealth. It's not through savings. The average person is not going to be able to retire if they don't invest. So once we have that emergency fund, once we started to pay off some of our debt, we then need to actually prioritize building wealth, which looks like investing.
Okay, awesome. So you mentioned the emergency fund and you've also talked a lot about investing. And then you also talked about paying off debt. Let's just say those three things are in play. Someone has a pocket of money. Where should they start? Emergency fund, investing, or paying off debt?
Great question. We have an entire chapter in my book. It's called The Financial Game Plan, and it's what to do in what order. So I'll give you the TLDR version of that. Emergency fund always is your priority, no matter how much debt you have. Even if you have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, we need an emergency fund. Why? One, I don't want you going into debt should an emergency arise. And it always seems to happen, right? And that debt is pretty costly typically. It's something like credit card debt. So we don't want you either going into debt or going into more debt trying to pay for that emergency. The second thing is that we believe in prioritizing your mental health here at Hereford Center K. And that looks like making sure that you have something in savings. Your head will hit the pillow at night and you know that you're taken care of should something happen. And that's huge. And then finally, back to the conversation we were having before, I need you to have your own money to get out of a bad situation. Women need an escape hatch. So that's why we prioritize that emergency fund first. It should be 3 months of living expenses in that high yield savings account. If that feels daunting, just start saving. 1 month, 2 months. Biggest thing, if you've like tuned me out, come back. This is so, so, so crucial. Automate your savings. Set aside an automatic transfer from your checking account to your savings account, just like you're another bill. Future you is another bill that's going out. We do that so it happens without us even having to think about it. You're building your savings that way, but also so you're not waiting to the end of the month to start saving when there's no money left. So this can be 5% of every paycheck or $200 a month, or even if all you've got right now is 10 bucks, great. 10 bucks a month is fantastic. You're building that savings muscle and it's allowing it to accrue over time. So that's priority number one, is that emergency fund. Step number two is paying off that credit card debt. And then we're going to prioritize saving / investing really for our own retirement, while paying down our lower interest debt, like student loans, car loans, mortgages, et cetera. One misconception that I hear a lot with money that is proliferated by my nemesis, Dave Ramsey, is that all of your debt needs to be gone before you start investing. And that's just not true. If your student loans are under 7% interest, we actually want to prioritize investing before we start aggressively paying down those loans, because we don't want to wait until, let's say you're like 40, 45 and your student debt's paid off and then you start investing for retirement. Like, that's not ideal. And also the math works in your favor to actually prioritize investing first. It's also just like some people, and it's totally understandable, just don't want debt anymore. They don't want to owe anybody money. They don't want it hanging over them. So they're just like, okay, I'm just going to contribute a bunch of money and get these knocked out so I don't have to worry about it. So I see merit in that too. There are so many resources though. If you don't know if you qualify for student loan forgiveness, Google it.
So when it comes to the future, even thinking about policies that might come through around student loan forgiveness, it feels like there's this feeling of like collective dread hanging over millennials and Gen Z. And people are just a little bit stressed about the future. They're a little bit worried about the future. And it seems as though there's this growing trend of people thinking, you know what, I don't know what's going to be happening, so I'm not even going to bother saving. What advice do you have for people that are struggling with feeling optimistic about the future enough to even plan for it?
First of all, girl, same. Here's the thing, is anything I'm going to say sounds like unicorns and butterflies and is difficult when we do live in a country seeped in inequity and inequality. It's like, I don't blame you for being frustrated. I'm fucking frustrated. This is not an ideal situation. I am a younger millennial. I was born in 94. And I feel like we've had the once in a lifetime crisis every 8 to 10 years. It was like 9/11 and then 2008 and then Trump getting elected and then COVID and then who knows what's coming next. I feel you. It's so frustrating. One of the things that I have to encourage you though, to put my personal finance expert hat on, is like, I hear that from especially Gen Z all the time. Why would I save for retirement? The world's going to end anyway. Or like, why would I do this thing? Because it doesn't fucking matter. I don't love capitalism, right? I'm not advocating for capitalism. I'm not a fan. If we opt out of capitalism, though, the only person we're hurting is ourselves. If we say, no, I'm not going to participate, well, at the end of the day, you do have to pay your rent. You do have to buy your groceries. Unless you're, I don't know, going to like a homestead in Alaska or something, and great if that's what you want to do. But like, you opting out only hurts yourself and your community. I don't want to win capitalism because that means I've exploited somebody, right? I don't need to be a billionaire, but I also don't want to lose capitalism either, because that means deep suffering for myself and for my community and for my family. So our work is focused on, how do you survive capitalism? How do you do the best you can while doing the least harm? And then how do we work to change the system for everybody else? And if you're like, everything's fucked, why would I do this? First of all, again, I get it. The second thing is, it's like, maybe it's not fucked. There have been people throughout time who have thought society is over. We went through 2 world wars and somehow got through that. And then let's say the world isn't ending. I don't want you looking back in 30 years, especially a member of a marginalized group, and being like, well, I didn't mean to fuck myself, but I did. So I don't know if I have a message of hope, but I hopefully have a message of realism, which is like, I want you to protect yourself to the best of your ability rather than feeling like, well, it's all hopeless for me, because that's what the system wants you to do. The system wants you to opt out. The patriarchy wants you to opt out. White supremacy wants you to opt out, because then it means, cool, the people who already have power, the people who already have money get to stay in power, get to stay having money. And every sign that I'm seeing points to women getting more money, having more money, having more power in the midst of all of these policies that I feel like disenfranchise women. So yeah, again, I could go on a rant about this forever, but I need you to take care of yourself.
Yeah, that's great advice. And what's a viral investment or finance hot take on TikTok that you've seen that people should not be listening to?
Oh my God, I've got so many. One is that you should neglect your 401k and invest in what's called a universal life insurance, or indexed universal life insurance, IULs. You see this from a bunch of white bros who are just like, this is how we get rich. And it's like, it's a straight up scam. It's a scam. Nobody makes money on this. Life insurance is great for life insurance. Life insurance policies, if you have a dependent, if somebody's dependent on your income, that's great. But you have life insurance for life insurance. Your life insurance should not be used as an investment. Just in general, most financial things, if they seem too good to be true, they probably are. One that is just, I mean, this is pre-social media and TikTok, but that like you can pick the hot stock. That's how we invest. That's what women believe, is that investing's about picking stocks. It's not. Actually, that's gambling. That's day trading. That's gambling. That's trying to get rich quick. And we know that that's a get rich quick scheme. So when it comes to investing, you're picking diversified long-term investments, something like an index fund. An index fund is a group of companies or a group of stocks. So you're not putting all of your eggs in this one basket. The other thing is, it's like, again, anybody telling you that they can pick the stock for you is lying to you. I found the stat my book, Financial Feminist, that says 75% of professional stock pickers don't outperform a diversified index fund that a civilian can choose on their own. This tells me that the people, again, that we're trusting with this multi-billion dollar industry are bad at their jobs. So I'm not giving my money to them. You shouldn't either. There's so much that, again, I think is rooted in give your money to somebody else, but also trying to find the secret to building wealth. There's no secret. It's patience. It's investing. It's knowing your numbers. And it's just reminding yourself that this is a long game.
Yeah. I read your book and you talk a lot about consistency. What are some consistent behaviors that people need to practice to build healthy wealth for themselves?
It's sitting down and dedicating at least an hour a month to looking at your money. And if you have a romantic partner you're managing money with, do this with them. Sit down, look at your credit card statements, look at your goals, look at your investments, look at your debt. Ask yourself, what can we be doing better? But also, what have I achieved in the past month? The thing about progress is you don't see it unless you see it.
One of the big things that worked for me was the automated investment. I've switched my approach now, but in the past, I used to have a bank account, a separate checking account that I wouldn't see in my online banking. So I would never see the temptation of the money that was sitting there. So that was helpful for me because it just left my bank account and it would sit there. But now I use Wealthsimple. This is not like an ad or anything. It's just what I use and what I like. And because it's not within my actual bank account that I check every single day, I always forget how much money's in there. And I just go there. I'm like, oh crap, the last 3 months have been good. I've been keeping it consistent.
That's a great hack. And it's something that I recommend, especially for people who have the temptation to transfer it back. You're like, cool, I automated my savings, but I'm going to take it back out a week later. Like, put it at a different bank, put it at a different institution. It's going to be more work. It doesn't mean it's not accessible, but it just means like it's another hoop to jump through. The other thing we can do, you can name your savings account. People don't realize this. Instead of like 24601, whatever your numbers are, you can literally say, okay, Croatian Vacation 2025 or Dream Home 2026. And you can actually have that emotional psychological trigger, which is like, shit, every time I take money out of this account, I'm one step further away from the goal that I really want. And at the end of the day, this is the thing that I highlight in my book that I really want people to understand. Ultimately, saving money is not for this random hypothetical. It's for you. It's for your goals and for your dreams. And so when it comes to personal finance, it's just this trade-off. It doesn't mean you can't have something. It's just, hey, if I buy this thing that I really want, I can't have this other thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. You'd mentioned saving up for a house. I'd mentioned my own personal goal that got me there. And there's been a lot of chatter on the internet and TikTok and amongst communities around whether it's worth to buy a house right now. Do you buy or do you rent? What are your thoughts on that?
Congratulations on buying a house and saving all that money first off. That's incredible. I am infamously a multimillionaire who chooses to rent for a couple of reasons. One, I live in Seattle, and Seattle is, like most major US cities, it's just fucking expensive. Now, anytime I talk about this, I have to highlight homeownership at this point is a privilege. Purchasing a home, being able to do that, and again, we were talking about before, when you have dual income, a lot easier to buy a house. But that's the other part of this is like, it's not only so expensive, it's just inaccessible for the average American now, which is a conversation again about rising housing costs and all of that. So I choose to rent. I could buy a house hypothetically. I just don't want to because it makes more sense for my lifestyle. It makes more sense for the season I'm in right now in my life.
What's your response to people that say that by renting, you're paying off someone else's mortgage and not
you're
creating that nest
egg?
Down
the drain. There, most people who do have a positive net worth in this country, it's tied up in real estate. So real estate might be a really smart option for you if that's something that you're able to do and something that feels flexible to your life. But I'm not throwing money down the drain. I'm paying for somewhere to live. And I'm paying for the convenience of being able to call somebody should something break or something, my toilet overflows or something crazy happens. It's not throwing money down the drain when I'm literally paying to have a safe, comfortable roof over my head. So I think that that is one of those outdated personal finance rules that I hear all the time. Rent if you want to rent, buy if you want to buy, and understand that a choice right now in this country is unfortunately a financial privilege. You getting to choose what you want to do says that you have enough money to make that choice.
For folks that are listening that are like, I really want to be a homeowner. It's like a lifelong dream for them. And renting doesn't seem like the best path towards that. What advice do you have for them?
The thing that I really want to highlight, if you're taking out a loan, you are going to get a credit check, right? And then depending on how good your credit score is, your loan terms are going to reflect that. So if you have a really good credit score, your loan's going to be cheaper. If you have a not so great credit score, it's going to cost you more money. So as we're preparing to buy a house and we're saving for that down payment and we're starting to research, we need to start increasing our credit score. So the best way to do this is use a credit card responsibly. If you don't already have a credit card, open one up and make sure you're paying your bills on time and in full, meaning that you're not carrying a balance and that you're not delayed in your payments. Being a smart user of credit is the best way to boost your score. The other hack that I love for credit scores is part of your credit score is what's called your credit utilization. It's exactly what it sounds like, but how much of your credit are you using? So if you have a credit card with a $10,000 credit limit and you put $5,000 a month on that, you're using 50% of your credit. If we really want to boost our score, you want to use 30% of your credit or less. So ask for a credit line increase from your credit card companies and then don't use it. So if we can get from $10,000 of a credit line up to $12,000 or $15,000, but we keep spending where we were at, well, suddenly now our credit utilization percentage drops and that can help boost your score because we joke that your credit score is like your adulting GPA. We could talk a lot about how credit scores are a kind of fucked up system as well, but they're a really great tool for you to be able to buy a house, to be able to buy a car, or to even sometimes now get an apartment to rent. So when it comes to making the total cost of your home less, boosting your credit score, spending that 6 months to even a year or two, practicing smart habits with your credit can really, really help.
So Fortune recently came out with an article saying that women are the economy's power players. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this sentiment. Do you feel like this is true?
I feel like it's so obvious and apparent to me. A lot of the articles that I've seen recently too are about the wealth transfer that's going to happen in the next couple of years. We're about to have the largest transfer of wealth in the history of the United States, and it's going to millennial women. We are an economy and in a society built on the backbone of women. And we're just starting to wake up to, wow, maybe if we invest in women's sports and women's entertainment and women's rights, that everything makes the world better and the world starts to change. So that's not shocking to me at all. I just think people are starting to wake up to that fact.
Yeah. And the article is underscored by some context with women becoming the number one group, single women specifically becoming the number one group of homeowners globally. This is a global truth, which is pretty phenomenal. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I just love it. I think that to your point before, if you are waiting, this is not just personal finance advice, this is life advice. If you're waiting for somebody to live a life that you want to live, we're done doing that. I have a partner that I love very much and we do lots of things together. And I also take myself out to eat all the time. I went to Disneyland last year by myself. And I'm not kidding when I say it was one of the best days of my life. I love doing things on my own. You gain confidence. You realize your own power by doing that. Whether that is financial, it's buying a house or starting a business on your own or buying a car or just showing up brave in financial spaces, I think is so important. And then your entire life, I never want women to look back and be like, God, I wish I would have done that, but I was waiting for somebody or I was waiting for somebody to do this with. So I just so love that. And we can take that sentiment into every part of our lives.
Totally. So speaking of viral advice, what's a piece of viral advice that you've found on TikTok or whatever, the socials, that you think people should be listening to?
Oh, that's a good one. Loud budgeting is a trend right now, and I love it, which is just like setting financial boundaries, being very clear when you can't afford something. I think that's great. We could have a whole episode about this. Weddings are so expensive, and if you can't afford to be a bridesmaid, you're allowed to tell your friends no. And that shouldn't wreck your friendship. That shouldn't wreck your relationship. And just weddings have gotten so expensive in terms of like, it's the bridal shower. And also the bachelorette party is not like a day. It's like a weekend in Tulum. And it's like so expensive. So you're allowed to tell your friends, no, hey, I can't afford that restaurant, but I'd love to go out for happy hour with you or come over and I'll cook for you. Or I would love to celebrate you on your wedding. I can't do that as a bridesmaid because I can't afford that. Or I would love to be a bridesmaid, but I can only come to this. I can only show up in this way. Is that all right? Again, this is where talking about money, I think, is so important. So I love this trend of loud budgeting. I'm trying to think what else. I think the other one I always really love to focus on is we get messages now every 5 minutes from women somewhere saying, I've paid off all of my student loans, or I saved my first $1,000, or I escaped that abusive relationship. And always there's a second sentence and it says something like, and I feel so much more confident in every aspect of my life now. Showing up as the biggest, best, baddest version of yourself without feeling like you have to do something that depletes you or that causes you to feel unsafe or is just not what you envisioned for your life.
I can think of a bunch of times in my life where when I had some financial independence, a little bit of money in the bank, I was able to go into a job interview and be less anxious and stressed out because I was like, you know what? If I don't get this job, it's totally fine.
Same thing with a date. Like, yeah. I'm not going out and dating to try to find someone who is going to fund my life. I'm trying to find somebody who sees me as an equal and sees me as a partner. That's so incredible. And also, I can slap down my credit card at any time and be like, no, I'm done here. And I'm not even going to have you pay the check because I don't want to owe you anything.
Yes, I totally agree. Totally agree. What I've been saying to a lot of my women friends is the real flex here isn't landing a guy that makes a ton of money. It's having the finances where you can choose to be with the person that you truly want to be with, who treats you well, and you can choose to leave that person if and when you want to, because they're not rising to the occasion of being the partner that you deserve and need. That's the flex. Landing yourself a rich guy that can support your lifestyle, to me, isn't that impressive. But that's just me personally.
Do it for yourself. Do it for yourself.
Yeah. I think that that's a great place to end this conversation. For folks that want to continue to learn and grow with you, where can they find you?
I am at HerFirst100K on all the socials. HerFirst100K.com is our website. And my book and podcast are called Financial Feminist.
Which, by the way, was a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, we sold over 150,000 copies in its first year. And it's been so cool to watch people be impacted by it. And thanks for reading it. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And you can keep this in if we want. We had mad tech issues on my side. So thank you to Avery and their team, the Girl Boss team. Thank you so much. I am so sorry. I owe them all cookies and flowers because, we had to stop and start about 27 times. So thank you.
Thank you. And that's a wrap on my conversation with Tori of Her First 100K and Financial Feminist. Tune in next week for another candid conversation with a special guest. Until then, please rate this episode or leave a comment to let us know what you thought. This podcast is produced by Liz Guber and Victoria Christie and edited by Diego Domine. Until next time, keep blooming.